This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Derek walks you through how to win government jobs and contracts, effectively manage your government career, and best utilize government services. Every week on Fed Access, you'll learn about interesting federal agencies, workers, and jobs. Fed Access provides you the access you need to succeed in the federal government. And now your host, Derek T. Dortch.
Welcome to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Thank you for joining us. Today we're going to have one of our favorite guests on again. Linda Ricks, she is co-CEO of AVIEW Technologies. They run AVIEW Central and a number of other sites. I'm going to have to let her tell all the different sites they run these days. The line of sites that is expanding every time I talk to her. But she has been one of our faithful and favorite guests because she's always has a lot of knowledge on what's going on. Thank you. Used to work for OPM. Now she's running a firm that's a government contractor as well as doing other things. Linda, you know, how are things going right now in terms of, you know, I mean, you as a contractor and, I wanted to kind of get your take on it because you have that kind of unique, you've been on both sides, mm-hmm. How are things going in terms of the contract community? Are you still feeling nervous? Are you feeling kind of excited going into 2014? And then even with healthcare, I mean, how is that affecting you as a government contractor?
Right. Yeah, it's certainly an interesting, turbulent time. I'm excited in the same way that, you know, one would express being scared. I think the climate in the federal government is really starting to really fray over the uncertainty of the federal budget and what's happening with that. So it's a lot of just trying to get any type of market certainty going where you can at least tell, is the focus going to be on healthcare? Is it going to be on IT? Is it going to be on cyber? Is it going to be on, you know, defense? Obviously, I think that's reducing. People can read those signs, I think, pretty readily. But I think that the big issue is especially if you're like we are, which is your focus is human capital management. You know, what are people doing in human capital management these days, and where should they be spending their time and their focus when, you know, a good, you know, 60% of an HR operations effort has always been hiring.
Right.
And now you have almost no hiring going on, and with budget uncertainty going in through probably January. And then if we don't get a budget and we end up on some type of CR process or the sequestration kicks in and we're on a reduction process, then what's going to be the role of the human capital management group in these federal agencies, and what are they going to be doing, because they're not going to be doing staffing? So there's a lot of uncertainty out there. I think the federal government human capital management programs have been so focused on hiring over the last probably over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
And the result of that is they are unprepared in other areas, and they've actually lost considerable skill in other areas that
were
probably going to need.
The biggest areas of concern?
I think the biggest area is going to be position management, and I mean that in a broad programmatic sense. You know, where are your assets? Who has what skills? Where are they? Are they contractors? Are they federal employees? Are they doing things that are directly in support of the funded mission, not the generically stated statutory mission, but what are you getting your money for? And are you able to optimize the strength of the organization and move toward that mission? And I think that's a skill that was pretty dominant in the federal government 25 years ago. This will tell you how long ago it was that I worked for
right,
OPM.
Sure.
But, you know, it was dominant in the government 20, 25 years ago, and it has gradually disappeared. I mean, these were people who did job classification extremely well, did the analytical work around manpower and strength. Manpower is the classic term DOD uses. You know, what should your authorized strength be? What skill set should it comprise? How do you want to deploy those skills? Those are the kinds of things that we're going to need in the next 5 years in the federal sector. We're not going to need a bunch of people who are going through job applications. So that change and that trend line change and where, you know, where that's going to happen, how that's going to happen is a big issue.
Right, right. You know, with all of that, and as we start looking, because human capital is probably one of those first areas to kind of go and kind of budget reductions, you
right.
know what I mean? And like you mentioned, if there's no hiring going on, but we've got a number of different dynamics happening. I mean, we have some, you know, I'm hearing about transition in government agencies. I'm hearing about retirement in some agencies. I'm hearing about succession planning in some agencies.
Right.
But, you know, those would probably seem like, you know, if you have to kind of maybe tighten up your HR staff and you maybe even lose some people and you mm-hmm. haven't done those functions for a long period of time, those are things that now seem to probably be that they don't have maybe either the staffing to do, the expertise to do.
Right.
Is that
right.
where you now have to come to some a company like yours to kind of get that? And are you starting to
so.
See that? We hope so. But I mean, are those areas that you see are the concerns?
Yeah, I think they're And the part of the problem is that the over the past 25 years, the people who now are really the leadership of the human capital organizations may not understand that that's the skill set they need to be looking for and activating and spending some very, very scarce training money to develop internally. Absent that, I think you got to go outside. And there are plenty of sources outside of government. And I think one thing the government does need to do is rethink its role and its participation rate with the private sector on some of these things. I know a lot has been, you know, kind of
maybe increase it,
or have it or do it differently.
Okay.
You know, Jeff Bezos at Amazon's model for really having Sunday delivery through the Postal Service is a great way to try to take a look at how does the relationship change between the private sector and government entities, even if they're not, you know, traditional Title V executive branch agencies may not see that potentially what will benefit them the most is the strength of how they partner with the private sector. But the private sector can not only provide contribution, but can also provide opportunity. And that I think is something the government is not used to thinking about because everybody worries about A76 and
right.
contracting out my job and outsourcing and all those kinds of things. But the truth is there's a pretty heavy contractor workforce already in play. And the problem is that government agencies don't really have a good handle on who's actually executing the mission and what capabilities are we drawing from, and are they internal or external? And if they are external, what are they? You know, that kind of thing.
You know, it brings a question because you mentioned about kind of position management and people management.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of brings a question, given the size of government, mm-hmm. it seems as if, and I don't know if this is correct or not, but would you say that many government agencies don't have a handle on their workforce in terms of, like you said, who's doing what? I mean, maybe some people do,
mm-hmm.
but in terms of a whole organization and exactly what's getting done, because mm-hmm. people will complain and say, well, you know what, you know, there are government workers who aren't doing anything, you know, and so there's a waste of money going on, or these government contracts are just getting money and they're not producing anything. We had the healthcare, you know, .gov debacle, you know, where you had a number of contractors working on something, but it seemed as if no one knew who was doing what.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden this site didn't work. And then obviously you had to bring a manager in, so to say, to oversee this thing. You know, do you feel like, you know, and we even had that with USA Jobs, you know, another situation where a rollout of something like that didn't seem to work out the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that there's a lot of government chaos and everything, because there's a lot of great things going on.
Mm-hmm.
But there are some big examples of it seems as if people are not able to see, well, what talent do we have? How do we utilize it? Or where do we need to go outside in order to get this talent? I mean, are you seeing that?
Yeah, I think there are several models that are problematic. I do agree with the White House's initial statements about the procurement system was a big part of the problem on the healthcare.gov site because it ended up being the inability to run an acquisition that would have gotten the right team together.
Okay.
The inability to manage the project and the tendency of the government to fall back on legacy models in technology that, you know, frankly, the private sector doesn't use and hasn't used for, you know, 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what you're seeing is, and you see it in HR really clearly. If the federal government were going to do something that would really change the dynamic of employment in the federal government, it would scrap 100% of what it has in regulatory structure around hiring, because the stuff came out of the 30s and the 40s and the 50s.
Right.
You know, and that was not only was that a completely different contract between employer and employee, but it was a completely different era from every sense of the word. And so now you've got a situation where people are trying to apply, you know, these legacy, age-old, you know, decades ago, regulatory frameworks into an environment in which it's, you know, it's just not
completely
you can't
changed.
Adapt it.
Sure.
Yeah, you can't get that far. So I think you got procurement issues, acquisition issues. You need to stop. The government likes to do black box decision making, especially when it comes to how it engages with the private sector, instead of engaging the private sector. I think most federal contractors will tell you that in an RFP process or an RFI process, you know, we'd really just prefer you not have us waste our time if it's really not competitive and isn't going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if you want to engage industry. But I think the government has to change how it engages the private sector going forward, because so much of what the government does is going to be executed by the private sector, period.
Is there a process, and you've been in this game for a long time, mm-hmm. where with contract people or contract specialists who are overseeing, COTARs or whoever,
right.
who are overseeing this, are they not, you know, even with this healthcare scenario or things mm-hmm. you've been through, are they, you know, only looking at kind of what's on paper rather than actually going out to the company to see if the capabilities are truly there? You mm-hmm. know, is that, you know, in turn, when we talk about a broken process mm-hmm. of hiring people and maybe the same people just getting hired and hired and no results coming from
right.
it, is that part of the process that is broken as well?
I think what I find typically when you're seeing an RFP come out and you see the requirements have to be so detailed and so specific. And in technology, there is probably 20% known and 80% unknown,
okay.
right? So when you want to do something like this, and you know, I brought up an example for some of our Washington State delegation. There's a company of four people in North Carolina that had a model that ran for years and years and years, free to federal employees, that would do basically a diagnostic front end that would then present to you alternative healthcare plans during open season. And you could, you know, see the pricing, you could see the differences. It illustrated it beautifully online. And no one ever thought that a company of four people might produce something that would easily have addressed the front end of healthcare.gov.
Yeah.
No one went to the National Finance Center and USDA and said, we understand you run 26 healthcare exchanges for state governments.
Mm.
What can you do for us here?
Right.
I mean, they didn't look inside the government
sure.
and they didn't look outside the government
sure.
very far. Instead, they created it as if it was a big, big multi-year technology
project.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and the worst part was it is a website.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, let's not get, you know, boxed into that, you know,
mm-hmm.
sort of, it's a website.
Right.
It's not like you have to have a big monolithic project that costs the, you know, the United States $500 million to get to this point, or 3 years to get to this point. You know, the way technology works today, you should have a prototype of what you are looking for, you know, within 2 weeks to 4 weeks of contract award. You should be able to see it. And then people who are really knowledgeable, like have already run a state healthcare exchange or run a healthcare exchange in a foreign government, should come in and look at it, examine it, scrutinize it, beat the tar out of it,
mm-hmm.
and come up with what needs to be addressed that is missing, get that gap analysis done, and then move it from there. But instead, it's all, we're going to write these requirements down in narrative form. You know, it's kind of like as if...
And who can write the best?
Yeah. Or it's like if you were going to go car shopping, the first thing you have
sure.
to do is you have to write down every component piece of the car
right.
and define what it's going to do
sure.
and what color it's going to be and what it's going to look like. and then how it's going to interact with the other parts. And if you had to do that before you went car shopping, then that's the equivalent of what the government does with big IT projects.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And you're just never going to get there.
Right, right, right. Yeah, take a quick break. I mean, you're bringing up a lot of different things that I think, you know, we have to think about in terms of government, in terms of, you know, when we talk about maybe broken government, and we're seeing certain things in action where we have seen broken government. And there's a lot of things you mentioned that are also positive that's going on in government, but sometimes other agencies are not looking around to see what other agencies are doing that may say, we can do this here. And I think these are all part of the problems that have to be changed. And we're not also bringing in innovative, smaller companies, you know, to do certain things. Like you mentioned, legacy systems or legacy, you know, vendors or legacy contractors, you know, they may just be getting the contract just based off of, you know, relationships or just because they've been around for a long time. You know, all these things seem to be issues that need to be addressed. We're talking about really the whole federal government. We're talking about human capital issues, talking about contracting issues. We're talking about all these different things. And later on the show, we're going to be listening to Linda talk about some of the new things that she's got going on at AVIEW Technologies that are for the government, classification systems and human capital systems that can help both sectors, both government and private sector, you know, hire the right people, manage the right, you know, people the right way, and then go from there. We're talking about all these different things on Fed Access. We'll be right back after this break. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dorch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having an interesting conversation about the federal government. What's going on with federal government in terms of hiring, contracting, and a number of different issues. We're talking to a person who's in the know on this, Linda Rick. She's co-CEO of AVIEW Technologies. They run AVIEWCentral.com and a number of other sites that deal with the federal government, Wildfire X and other things like that. We'll talk about that later on in the show. But Linda, you know, you're a government contractor. You've been on both sides of this table. We were talking about some of the issues of, you know, what's broken in terms of hiring, what's broken in terms of the human capital process, and it also kind of faded off into healthcare.gov, where we have a prime example of maybe something that's broken, but in this of what can be fixed, you know. And you even mentioned about these smaller companies that had, you know, ideas already or things that they were already working on that probably could have saved the government a whole bunch of money if, you know, they knew about these smaller companies and say, hey, listen, you got a model already working. Let's just talk to you guys. You know, if for even companies like you who are, you know, maybe small, mid-sized, and you're competing against, you know, bigger companies, do you find that to always be a challenge that in this contracting process that it's hard for, a government agency to hear you, you know, or it's hard for them to identify the innovations that you are bringing to the table because you're competing against some of the bigger boys or bigger companies,
Bigger companies, I think that the tendency of the federal government is to rely on very, very large companies. The federal government likes to deal with people that are just like them. And so the bigger the company, the more assurance or the less risk that is perceived by the government for a project the government perceives to be important to it. That has nothing to do with the result, and it has nothing to do with the past performance of these companies. It has very little to do with whether another company is going to have the capability or not. But in the case of if you're going to build an aircraft carrier or something like that, or, you know, a tanker or something like that, you know, the tendency is you're only going to have a handful of potential competitors anyway. But when it comes to technology, you know, every high school dropout with a garage is, you know, a contender. And you
Apple,
never want
Microsoft. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
HP garages.
I mean, and they're still big.
Right.
And you know, the thing that I really think is difficult in selling innovation to government, which is I think the center of the topic that you see a lot around healthcare.gov is why is it hard for the government to innovate? Well, one reason is because innovation really comes from very small cells, right? And it comes from one or two people or four people in the case of Asperity down in North Carolina, which did get acquired by ADP. But, you know, when you're looking at it and you think, well, you know, what you're looking for is someone who really understands how to create in today's environment with the tools we have today. So if you take a HHS award to CGI, and then CGI puts the stuff in their data center, and their data center is constrained, HHS should have gone to Amazon, or as I like to say, you know, the president should have picked up the phone and said, you know, hello, Mr. Bezos, this is the president and I need your help.
I need your help, yeah.
The burstable bandwidth of a cloud app like AWS, Amazon Web Services, is infinitely scalable. And a data center from a traditional data center operator, or how the government operates its own data centers, are not, they just don't scale.
Right.
And they can't scale on demand. And that's where not only does it save the government a whole bunch of money, but you also don't have these catastrophic failures. Now, personally, I think that scalability was not really related to the underlying infrastructure as much as it was the code didn't scale.
Sure.
But you do have, you know, these are issues that the government needs to change its thinking about, basically.
You know, you mentioned something, and this kind of goes into a dynamic of the concern about innovation, you know, because you have a number of companies. And I mean, I know me and you have talked about, we even talked about Amazon today, where Amazon is 300 people per second that they are, you know, processing.
During Christmas time, yeah.
During Christmas, I mean, and then I listen to the numbers for healthcare.gov, it's about 50,000 people or whatever, and it's like, okay, you know, that's great. I mean, but there are already, like you said, solutions that are already out there.
Right.
You know, whether it be bigger companies or small companies, there have already been solutions out there of people who say, we're already doing this.
Right.
And it seems to be a process where no one is either thinking about this or no one is taking a look around, whether it be internally or externally, to find these solutions ahead of time.
Right.
And I guess my concern is, why is that? I mean, why have you seen to be, you know, why is that? Are just the managers kind of stuck? Is it policy? Is it something that needs to be rewritten in a policy wise? Is it just a thinking?
It's partially thinking,
okay.
But I think you could overcome that pretty fast if you change the procurement process.
Okay.
And people fear the procurement process.
Why?
Because if you take something big like healthcare.gov and you think they're going to be like 150, 250 big companies that want to compete for that business, right? Everything else is drying up in the government. There's no classic systems integrator work. There's none of that stuff. So when you look at it and you think, okay, if we're going to get a chunk of something big, that's going to help our company financially, we're going to try to be competitive. So what happens is the government says, well, if we do that, we've got 3 years to get the site up and running. If we do a big open competitive process, that's going to take us a year to 18 months just to run the competition. And then we're going to get protests. Hmm. And that's going to stall us out and do all these other things. And instead, what the president should have done is, by a magic stroke of a pen on an executive order, said, this is the number one priority for the country. We are not going to run a traditional procurement or competitive process.
Does the president have that ability?
We're not going to get balled up for 2 years. I don't know, but if I were the president, I would have done it.
Okay.
Because
executive
by the time
order.
They catch
yeah,
you
sure.
later,
right.
you're
right.
done,
right.
And
right.
the product's
better
up and running.
Better ask for forgiveness than ask permission, right? Yeah.
But also, I think the predecessor event should have been to invite Amazon and Google, eBay, Craigslist, Angie's List,
right.
All these people that run heavy-duty transactions that have sites where it recommends things, where you have reviews, where you have the interaction with the consumer base, where the consumer already knows the site
right.
and how to operate it, called all those people in and sat them across the table from the insurance companies and said, how do we want this to work?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And then from there, done a procurement.
Right.
But also invited in people who are from very small, very agile technology companies that, you know, are maybe nascent in terms of what they do. But at the same time, they are able to bring something unique to bear on the problem. So you get the infrastructure guys like the Amazons and the Googles and folks like that. You get people who do good application development in a very agile way.
Right.
You know, I think there was just not enough of that on the front end. And you're right. The parallel to USA Jobs is almost identical.
Right. I guess, you know, I talk about this concern is that it seems as if, and I've sometimes have been around the venture capital community,
yeah.
where, you know, they will come in and say, if you have a great idea, come present your great idea, show us what you have, and then if it flies, and it's small, big, whoever the case is,
right.
And then we'll fund it. You know, maybe, you mm-hmm. know, that we'll take a risk on it.
Mm-hmm.
It almost seems that the government procurement process may need to open its doors a little bit on this kind of process,
right.
And kind of say, you know what, small, big, medium, come bring your idea and show us your model.
Right.
You know, show yeah. us something.
Well, I think the government procurement process is a lot to me like the government hiring process.
Mm-hmm.
You end up with a process that is designed to avoid some type of illegal action.
So it's everything about risk. It's risk
aversion.
It's
all about risk mitigation.
Sure.
And safety.
Sure.
And all those kinds of things. And
we don't want to get sued. We don't want to get litigation. We don't want this.
Right. Yeah. And we don't want to have people act mm-hmm. improperly. When what you should be doing is just holding the people who act improperly, you know, when you catch mm-hmm. them, hold them accountable and deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, what we do is we write a regulation so nobody else will ever do that
mm-hmm.
again. Well, over 30 years or 40 years, you now have this bogged down process that
right.
just doesn't work. It's completely
right.
unresponsive to the market.
Right.
The federal hiring process is completely unresponsive to both the employer need and the labor market. You know, it's these kinds of things that where you really have to radically reform the process.
I want to talk more about that as we go into the next segment, because I know you guys have a product that's like position classification. I've always,
mm-hmm.
you know, talked about the position, the job announcement
yeah.
as being kind of the honestly, the foundation of a good hire. You know, when we
yeah.
talk about the consequences of a bad hire,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to me, as these budgets are getting shrunken,
mm-hmm.
you know, we can't afford bad hires in government because,
right.
you know, I mean, once you get them in there, then it's tough to get them out. And then, you know, if you can't hire new people or
right.
anything like that, we can't afford consequences of a bad hire. So some of this is kind of getting it right on the front end to
yeah.
make sure you can get the right people, but not creating such a position, you know, announcement that is also going to turn away the right candidate as well.
Right.
You know, I want to talk about that as we come back. We're talking about federal government. We're talking about human capital issues, contracting issues. We're talking about a number of issues with Linda Rick. She's co-CEO of Aview Technologies. You can find them at aviewtech.com. They run a site called Aview Central, aviewcentral.com. With a number of other sites, but you can find them on Aview Tech and see what they have going on. They do a number of human capital services and other services for federal government, so check them out. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we've been having an interesting conversation about the federal government, and I know we do that on Federal News Radio all the time, but we've been talking about federal human capital issues. We're talking about contracting issues and talking about the impact of everything that's been going on lately. I mean,
mm-hmm.
everything that's been going on with the budget process, with the sequestration, with the contracting process, the procurement process, and how it's possibly stifling innovation.
Mm-hmm.
It's possibly stifling a number of good things that could possibly happen with the federal government and making some positive changes. We're talking about that. We have Linda Ricks. She's one of our favorite guests, and she knows this process well because she's been on both sides of the process, still deals with it today. She runs Aview Technologies, aviewtech.com. But Linda, you know, when we talk about this, and I know you've dealt with the human capital side of federal
mm-hmm.
government because that's been one of your main
right.
pieces in terms of the services you provide for federal government.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned that in terms of a broken process, procurement and hiring,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear about it all the time from a number of people who are trying to get hired on a regular basis that it's tough. You know, there's all these different hurdles.
Right.
There's a lot. I can't read the position descriptions the right way. We had this reform, supposedly.
Right.
I was supposed to make it plain text and plain language. You know, we had all this, you know, hoopla about it, and
yep.
I had never seen it change, to be honest with you. Where are we at right now with this? And then, you know, where do we need to go in terms of fixing this hiring process? I know we've been talking about this forever.
Right.
But where do we need to go with this?
Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say the federal hiring process is broken. It's pretty much a disaster at the moment. There's so much labor and effort and all of it goes in, not into the quality of the hire, but into the perfection of the process.
Mm.
And that's where we're starting to really see, and there's a lot of catch-22s in the process for the employer as well as for the applicant that's trying to apply. So I kind of see it as it's time to really take a look at how does the process get streamlined. And, you know, there can be things that are very controversial, like, you know, we know there's a revolving door between contractors and federal agencies,
sure.
right, as employers and as people who are buying products and services. Well, you know, the acknowledgement of that is what you ought to do is make that revolving door process a method of recruiting. There are a lot of hiring managers that have contractors on board that they really like, that have worked for them, that they're known entities, and they want to give them a full-time job. And the idea of trying to compete every single position to get a hire in is irrational. The level of effort that that takes is pretty much, if we were to look at the number of HR specialists per employee in the federal government, it's like one HR specialist for every 48 to 52 employees. In the private sector, it's one HR specialist for every 250 mm-hmm. employees. That's a process problem where you just have, it's just too overburdened by regulation that isn't effectively getting the government the quality of candidate that they want. And I know this is controversial, whether hiring contractors or, you know, other points in the process, but there's so much of it that we have, and it's little things like...
But, you know, we do it on the private sector. It's in the temp firm, you know, if a company brings a temp firm in,
right,
and you have a good temp worker, then that's the whole point.
Yeah.
You know, you find somebody who may have worked here for 6 months as a temp,
right,
maybe not your full-time employee. You've had time to, you know, kind of vet them out, mm-hmm. see if they do a good job, and then... boom, you hire.
Right.
You know? So I guess I wonder where the controversy for the government comes into play.
Right. It's sort of it's a contrived. It's a structure in the process that is simply an artifact of these decades old regulations. So when you look at it and you think, okay, what's the best way for the government to staff? And one is, you know, and the government says this all the time, we have to have contractors because we can't fire anyone.
Mm-hmm.
For us to have a workforce that expands and contracts mm-hmm. rapidly enough, we have to rely on the contractors to do that. Well, that's fine. But at the same time, it's the lack of performance accountability where you do have people who lag in terms of their performance and nothing is ever done about it because it's just too hard. And that process of having the ability to hire and fire based on clean performance metrics is something that, again, the private sector does that the federal government does not do. And there was a time when the federal government really did consist of tenured public servants, right, that had tenure.
Mm-hmm.
And that has gone away,
right,
over time. And so what it's doing now is it's creating a huge problem with satisfaction of employees in the workforce. They see management not dealing with performance issues. They see people that are above them that do less than they do, and they're waiting for them to retire so they can move up, so the new workforce isn't energized.
Well, you know, a story that I hear a lot with management is that rather than actually deal with the employee, you don't terminate them, you just send them out to the wilderness.
Yes.
You know, and so they're still on the books,
yeah,
but you sent them out to some other, either some office you can't see them, or you sent them to another, you know, region or something like that.
Yeah.
But you never really got rid of the problem. You just kind of sent them away from your office. And so it doesn't solve anything because you still have a bad person working for the government,
right,
and still wasting government dollars.
Yeah. When one of the tests that I always use when I look at an HR operation is I say, is the HR office valued by management?
Mm-hmm.
Well, one key indicator that it is not valued by management is if it is in a separate building.
Mm.
Because now I don't even run into you in the hallway.
Right. Sure.
You know, it's the same kind of thing. Well, I'll just out of sight, out of mind,
right,
and not deal with it. Or my other favorite is, you know, employees who arrive at the office and there's a little blue envelope on their desk.
Mm-hmm.
It's the one with a personal
sure.
note in it.
Sure.
And you open it up and it's a job announcement in another agency.
Right.
You know, and you're thinking, what kind of processes have
right.
we created
sure.
here
sure.
to
sure.
work around,
right,
you know, this very issue? And
right,
you know, what we really need to do is really consider very, very hard some type of massive reform.
Is there somebody willing to, because I'll play devil's advocate.
Yeah.
there will be people who will say, well, the system as built is here to protect people, you know, preferences. We've built this system in order to make sure that there's not going to be this nepotism. There's not going to be these things that have gone on that, you know, where people complain that the government was just, you know, once one person got in, they just, you know, brought their family or friends, you know, and it wasn't that fairness in hiring. And that's why all these regulations are here now to ensure that there's fairness.
Right.
So what would you say to that?
Well, I think the idea of fairness and the idea of merit are very important ideals and values to hold. The problem is when the regulations are such that they operate against merit. And this is a problem that you know, we like to believe a couple of things in this country is kind of fundamental. One, it's a meritocracy. It's always about if you can make it, if you're going to make it anywhere in the world, go to the United States because you're going to have that shot.
Yeah. Sure.
And there will be nothing to keep you from doing that, right? So we have this meritocracy bias. And then the other bias we have is that no one should be given an unfair advantage. And a lot of times when you look at things like veterans preference or affirmative action or things like that, people think that's an unfair advantage. And what it really is nothing more than a public policy that says, this is what we're about as a country, and we're going to implement public policy that supports that. Well, here's a really simple thing. Instead of complicating veterans' preference by the rule of three that we used to have, or now category rating, which is pretty much a fairly massive mess at the current time. You know, when we look at those things that we have, why not simply say every agency's workforce must be comprised at least of 35% veterans? I mean, this is pretty easy to do. You don't have to write a bunch of high-bound procedural rules to do that. You can simply say, you know, our composition, we're looking at representation rates, we're looking at composition, we want a balanced composition in the federal government because it's going to be reflective of our society that we deliver services to. So let's do that. But you don't have to do it this way.
You know, when we talk, I want to hear, because I know that you guys have thought about solutions, you know, for some of these issues. And I want to talk about some of the things. We got to take a quick break, but I want to talk about some of the solutions that you have, you know, from AVU Tech, that you're saying, hey, listen, this is the better way to do this. This is the better way to do the position description. This is the better way to manage or perform, you know, look at performers, look at bad performers and things like that and how you deal with those kind of people. I want to talk about that when we come back. We're talking to Linda Rick. She is co-CEO of AVU Technologies. You can find them at avutech.com. They also run avucentral.com. If you're a federal job seeker or, you know, whether you're in the government or outside the government trying to get into the government, go to avucentral.com. It's a good job site where you can find federal jobs and then also put your application on in. We'll be right back after this break. We're talking about a number of different federal issues, human capital, procurement, and other things. You're listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to Fed Access with Derek T. Deutsch on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the federal government, the procurement process, human capital, issues that are very, very relevant to this time and age and issues that we've been dealing with for a long time. We're always trying to find some solutions. And I think hopefully maybe we can talk about some solutions right now, especially as we, you know, deal with a smaller budget on the federal government. We don't have the faucet has been turned off, so to say. So now we're at a trickle. And so we're looking at ways in order to provide solutions to the federal government that may come from the private sector or may come from any other sector. We're talking to Linda Rick. She is one of those solution providers. They run avutech.com. AVU Technologies, and you can find them at avutech.com. But they run, she's co-CEO there, and they have a number of solutions. Linda, I wanted to talk about some of these solutions because you have been a human capital provider for a long time. You know, when we talked about the broken process of federal government and hiring and all these rules and regulations, and I know me and you were talking about, like, you have a position description program, and I know you have a performance management. What are some of the things that you bring to the table to kind of say, this is what we offer that can maybe help a government agency get an HR specialist, whoever, get past all of this stuff and do a good hire?
Yeah, it's part of what we're trying to do is be responsive to how the government has shifted the burden of the hiring process. Okay, so one thing that we started to notice was that even though there's a presidential mandate for an 80-day hiring model, this is the big thing that has captured all of the time and attention of HR specialists. And one of the things that we learned from that process was that the way the government agencies responded to that initiative was not to improve the process or the efficiency of the process, but to shift the burden of key components of the process that were particularly labor-intensive from HR to the hiring manager. Mm-hmm. So one thing the hiring manager has to do is they have to create a perfect position description. Mm-hmm. I mean, these PDs in government are finally worked word to word. And a lot of times, because it isn't perfect, it will be sent back to become more perfect.
But it's perfect in the government eyes, but to the consumer or to the person, the job seeker, is kind of like, what is this?
Yeah, it's a terribly bureaucratic language. But it's important to HR that language be there. And there's a whole structure of other regulations that force HR to be concerned about that language being there. And so then, you know, once that's done, then the hiring manager has to do a job analysis, which used to be the exclusive domain of industrial psychologists, right? And so now we've got to go figure it out from our job description, what skills are we going to recruit for and how are we going to do that? And that has to pass muster in the HR office. And, you know, 25 years ago, this was done by HR. In fact, it was done largely by OPM on behalf of government agencies. So what we're finding is the burden shift is where we want to pay attention as a company. It's not that we don't want to support HR professionals. We do. We want to support HR professionals with, you know, the tools and the systems that they need to expedite their work and make them, feel better about not just their efficiency rate, but the quality of what is being produced. But at the same time, we're seeing this overburdened manager who's the first stop in the hiring process. So if the floodgates open tomorrow and you all get a budget and, you know, we're off to the races on hiring, the first thing the hiring manager has to do is sit down and write the PD, do the job analysis, perfect the documents, and only when the package is complete is it accepted by HR, and then a job gets posted.
Right? How long can that take?
Well, in the case of job classification, in most agencies, that's a 6-month process.
Wow, jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now you're 6 months behind.
And then you got to hurry up and spend the money.
Yeah. Exactly. So we're actually experts at job classification. That's where the company started. That's the roots of the company. Those are my roots. I adjudicated classification appeals when I was at OPM Lowe's many years ago. And one of the things that we've decided to do is say, okay, what federal hiring managers need today is easy, instant online access to specific job descriptions with specific hiring criteria associated with those job descriptions, so their part of the burden takes them 15 minutes instead of a week. And that's really what our focus is. We call it CPRO.
Okay.
It's a product that we're coming out with that's basically going to take over some of the other stuff that we've done classically in the past. So we're taking basically elements of what we have and kind of reformatting it into a new offering. Mm-hmm. And then part of that also allows you to have the position management functionality, because now you know the skills behind the job descriptions. So now you can get a skills inventory. Now you can look at your workforce more holistically, not on the job classification, but on what skills are required to perform the duties that were in that position description. So lots of duties in PDs are not the thing that drives the classification.
You know, with all of that, and as you look at kind of the cutting down that time, you know, and then kind of saying, taking it from months to weeks or days, you know, I mean, I think about the impact on
minutes.
You know, I mean, and I think about the impact on that in terms of hiring, because as you mentioned, I mean, a lot of times we'll see these job announcements or, you know, even with the HR person, they get frustrated because they've gone through this process for like several months to get a person who they say, I need now.
Right.
You know, and I hear from hiring managers all the time. And then when they get a group of people, they may be like, these are not the people who I need.
Right.
So,
right.
So then we're into 8 months or a year of trying to just even get somebody. You know? I mean, is that something that you're kind of constantly thinking about with the C Pro and everything else?
Right. And here's a really good example. If you take, not to pick on the VA, but let's take the VA for a second. The VA accounts for 40% of the job postings on USA Jobs.
Okay.
Almost all of them are in the 600 series, which are the medical series, doctors, nurses.
Okay.
The reason they account for 40% is because every job is uniquely posted in the VA.
Hmm.
Now, let's think about that if you're an applicant. I see this all the time. I'm at home watching TV, and there's an ad from the VA recruiting doctors and healthcare professionals to come to work for the VA.
Right.
Now, I happen to be in Tacoma, Washington, on the other coast. So if I want to apply for a job, I have to go to USA Jobs, I have to look for a posting, and then I have to look for a posting in the locations that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, each one of those is going to be a different posting. So I'm going to apply, I don't know how many times.
Different applications, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And so one issue that we struggle with all the time is agencies will not do open, continuous, nationwide postings mm-hmm. of all locations, all grades.
Mm-hmm.
Of positions in a particular job family, mm-hmm. right? And the reason they won't is because they consider that burdensome for HR professionals.
Mm.
Now, in truth, in the last 5 years, the VA has increased its expenditure by several hundred million dollars a year just in staffing.
Just to handle
hiring.
Okay.
And at the same time has decreased its actual result by 15,000 hires a year.
Mm.
Okay, so now we've increased exponentially by hundreds of millions of dollars what we're spending to do a function mm-hmm. that has a decreased value. The DOD is the same. You've had this increase by $500 million a year in people and in systems and so forth, and a net decrease by 20,000 people a year mm-hmm. in hires. So you have to ask yourself, what's the disconnect?
Yeah,
and
sure.
how do we stop the madness?
Right.
You know,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to these things. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at it from the standpoint of it's so counterproductive at this point that it's bordering on, you know, flagrant waste. And if it's that counterproductive, what has to change to make it more streamlined, not just for the applicant, but for the person who's looking to have, you know, a position filled and, you know, a productive employee.
I know you're running the Wildfire X, which is focused in on hiring
wildfire firefighters.
Both government and private sector.
Right.
I mean, is the model that you're using, you know, for that, and, you know, we got about a minute left, mm-hmm. is that the model that can be used for other government agencies in terms of an open, continuous, you know, hiring
yes.
spectrum and bringing people in?
Yes, it's exactly that model. And it's also the redistribution of the work. What we noticed was that the federal government has reduced the amount of wildland firefighters by 12% over the last 5 years, and they've reduced their permanent hires in those same occupations by 5%. So we said,
the need is still there.
The country is burning up
hugely.
Somebody's got to be doing this.
Sure.
Well, the burden shifted to state and local governments in the private sector.
Okay.
And so what we found is state and local governments can't afford massive hiring efforts, mm. massive recruiting efforts, nor can they afford a full-time wildland firefighter workforce in case they don't have a fire.
Right.
So our idea is on-demand, highly certified, skilled trained professionals in a database by map, you know, by criteria that any of these employers can go in and go ahead and mine that database and hire those individuals on the spot, on demand. Mm. And that's the next generation of hiring, no matter where you are.
So even with the VA example, and we got to close up, and it's, you know, we always got to bring you back. but if you want to have a nursing situation, mm-hmm. you could have the same dynamic of nurses in this database.
Right.
And as you needed them, you send out a note, we need this kind of nurse, boom. You know,
exactly.
And rather than having, you know, 40,000 job announcements out there,
yep.
you just hit it out to the different nurses who are out there.
Yep. And you got a ready talent pool and you're good to go.
And so, wow. These are things that we got to keep on talking about, because I think we've got to drive this dynamic of solutions home in terms of the federal government, you know. And a lot of times I think about the federal government in terms of the waste. You know, we think about all this stuff in terms of the budget reduction. There's a lot of just pure waste that's happening in terms of what we're spending money on and not getting the results.
Exactly.
And so we've got to continue to have this conversation. Linda Rich.
Cool. Thank you so much.
She is co-CEO. Thank you for coming on Fed Access as usual. Co-CEO of AVU Technologies. You can find their company at avutech.com. AVU Central. WildfireX is what?
WildfireX.com.
WildfireX.com. AVUCentral.com. A number of different things going on.
Yep.
We're going to definitely have you back. We'll be talking to you in January about some stuff. So we're looking forward to doing that as well.
Some thank cool so announcements. Much, yep.
Right.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
You've been listening to Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Access with Derek T. Dortch, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.